Got a guest on line with us today, Ross Cohen. He is an author, and of course, he has a Valley City connection, too. We're going to welcome him in just a second, if I can get the right button. There you go, Ross. Welcome to the show, Ross.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Pleasure to be here.
You bet. Now, Ross is an author. He's going to give a lecture series at the Barnes County Museum this Thursday. Let's talk a little bit more about yourself. You're born and raised in Valley City, is that right?
Born at Mercy Hospital, 1972, that's right.
There you go. Excelente. So you kind of, so you have a real love for Valley City then, and some of the family, you still got some family around here too?
I sure do. I got a lot of family in North Dakota still. I don't make it back to Valley City as often as I'd like, but yeah, it's certainly my hometown.
All right. And then you finished off your high school in Fargo then, is that right?
So. That's right. Fargo South. And then I ended up going, I went to UND in Grand Forks for a few years, and anyway, long story short, I made my way to Fairbanks, Alaska, which is where I live now.
Okay. So, did you want to talk about the UND controversial nickname issue or not today?
What is that, Steve? I don't know anything about that.
I bet you don't. I bet you never heard of it, right?
No.
Oh, boy. Well, let's get into it. Ross, you've written a few books. You've got a new one out now called Fugo. What in the world does Fugo mean?
Fugo, F-U-G-O. It's a code name for a Japanese weapon of World War II. This is the Japanese balloon bomb. These are large hydrogen balloons, huge, 30 feet in diameter, armed with different types of explosives, and they were used by the Japanese in the latter stages of the Second World War, 1944, 1945.
And did any of those balloons make it over here?
Yes, they did. They Japanese launched 9,000 of these balloons from November of 1944 to April of 1945. About 350 are confirmed as having arrived in North America. Now, what the Japanese would do, they knew all about the jet stream. Now, that name doesn't actually come along until after the war, but the strong westerly winds of the upper atmosphere. And the Japanese knew that to launch these balloons in Japan, once they reached an altitude of about 30 to 40,000 feet, they would enter those westerly winds, be carried across the Pacific Ocean in 3 to 4 days, arrive somewhere in North America, and then these bombs would presumably rain down on the western states, creating forest fires, wreaking havoc, basically distracting the Americans from the war effort. And in fact, two of these balloons landed in North Dakota, and I'm going to talk about that at my lecture on Thursday night.
That's great. So you're going to keep us in suspense till Thursday as to where they landed, right?
I can't give away all the details, right?
Okay. That's amazing. So two of those balloons landed in North Dakota. Now, they were actually launched from the Japanese mainland?
Yeah, that's right. They were very large balloons, as I said, about 30 feet in diameter, filled with 19,000 cubic feet of hydrogen. So these huge balloons would rise to an altitude of 30 to 40,000 feet and then be carried across the ocean by those westerly winds. Now, the failure rate for this weapon was very high, so most of them ditched into the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I said, 350 arrived, mostly clustered in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State, Oregon, Northern California, as far north as Alaska, as far south as Mexico, and the farthest east balloon was just outside of Detroit, Michigan.
That's amazing that it got that far to Detroit, Michigan from there.
It's
wow.
Pretty incredible, pretty incredible. The Japanese had no other way of attacking the mainland of the United States. They didn't have, you know, submarines or naval vessels that they could spare, with most of the war concentrated in the South and Western Pacific. There was no other way for the Japanese to reach North America. And so these balloons, even though the prospect of damage was considered very small, the Japanese felt that nevertheless it was worth an attempt, if nothing else, for the boost in morale that it might give, that stories of these balloons arriving might provide to Japanese citizens.
Very, very interesting. We're speaking with author Ross Cohen, and he's going to be speaking at the lecture series at the Barnes County Museum this Thursday night at 7 o'clock. It's free. It's open to the public, and he's going to put on a very good presentation about his new book, Fugo, and the curious history of Japan's balloon bomb attack on America. Now, anything else about this before we maybe go on to some of the other books that you talked about that you'd like to hit on, Ross?
Well, one of the last thing I guess I would say about Fugo, you know, we in World War II, we tend to think of the United States as being relatively isolated by virtue of the, you know, the Atlantic Ocean on one side of us and the Pacific Ocean on another. And that's largely true. The United States escaped the devastation that was wrought upon cities in Europe and the Pacific theater. But these balloons were the one thing, the one weapon that demonstrated that the United States could be attacked from another continent by a free-floating missile traveling across the ocean. And so I make the point in my book that this is very much a precursor to what came later with the Cold War and prospects of much larger devastation in this new era of warfare.
This had the U.S. War Department. At that time, it was called the U.S. War Department. They were very concerned about this.
Very concerned. Their highest priority was, or their highest fear, I should say, was biological attack. They feared that these balloons might be weaponized with some sort of bacterial agent or chemical agent. And so all of the balloons that were arriving were investigated for the presence of any of these agents. None were found, and in fact, the Americans learned after the war by interviewing Japanese military officials that there were never any plans to weaponize the balloons with bacterial agents. But when you think about, you know, unmanned missiles and biological warfare and weapons of terror, I mean, we're facing, you know, many of those same issues today.
We sure are, that's for sure. Now, you've written a couple of other books too, right?
That's right. I wrote a monthly newspaper column in Fairbanks, Alaska, where I live, on Alaska history. And after I had done that for about 5 years, I realized, geez, you know, I've got 60,000 words here. And so we took 5 years' worth of those columns, collected them in a book illustrated with historic photographs. That was my first book, called The Long View. So it's these very short chapters about Alaska history. I'll have that book available for sale at Thursday night at the museum as well. And then my second book was about an oil tanker, oil and gas transportation systems in the Alaska oil industry in the 1960s.
These books will be for sale, obviously, after your lecture is over with. The lecture is free and open to the public. It's this Thursday, 7 p.m. at the Barnes County Museum. Nice to have you with us today, Ross. And, anything else to say before we let you go?
Well, I'll tell you, I, you know, like I said, my heart has always been in Valley City, and I've got a lot of teachers, you know, from Jefferson Elementary and the junior and high school, a lot of old friends that I haven't seen for a while, and so I would really love for anybody to come out on Thursday and say hello. That would be a real treat, so thank you very much.
You bet, Ross. Good luck.